This is Lubo Talk on human papillomavirus and the HPV vaccine. I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at UnityPoint Health, St. Luke's Hospital. The human papillomavirus, or HPV, is one of the most common sexually transmitted infections, and almost everyone will be exposed to it at some point in their lifetime. Fortunately, HPV vaccines provide excellent protection against infection. Return to the podcast to discuss the HPV vaccine and the importance of vaccinations in general is Dr. Dinah Conte, pediatrician with UnityPoint Clinic Pediatrics, Tower Terrace. Dr. Conte, welcome back.
Thank you.
Boy, there's a lot of virus and vaccine in that header there that I was kind of clumsy with, but it's important to talk about. I was at a conference. I think you and I spoke either at some point in the last year. I was at a conference, and they went through the influence HPV had not only on HPV infections, but also malignancies, cancers of the genitourinary tract, oral pharyngeal too,
yes.
Right? And so this has been on my short list of items to discuss. I was really impressed with the data they have on this, that this is, you know, penile carcinoma in your late middle ages or some sort of oral pharyngeal cancer can be a terminal event.
Yes.
You know, or definitely the surgeries that are required are life-changing.
Yes.
I mean, we won't go into those details, but I can assure you they are. So tell us about how you see its role in healthcare in preventing malignancies. I mean, you're a pediatrician, right?
Exactly.
So,
preventive medicine
is
my specialty. So
that's an opportunity. An opportunity that you won't commonly see the results of that, you know, and that's
right.
Sometimes the hard part. Surgeons are so lucky. They do surgery. They have the patient gets better and
exactly.
Their appendix
they can
is gone.
See the
yeah, they can
of their
see
labor.
It, you know, and you know, I treat someone's cholesterol and prevent them from having a stroke. I really don't get I only know if they have a stroke, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so sometimes that delayed gratification is continued to be delayed, which is okay because we want people better. But kind of just tell us how you see it. And how you see it in your practice.
Sure. Well, human papillomavirus, like you said, it's a virus and it causes cancer in the mouth, the throat, the penis, the anus, the space between those two, and the vulva, the cervix, and the space between the vulva and the anus as well. So that's a lot of cancer that is prevented with the vaccine. But HPV doesn't just cause cancer. It causes something called warts or genital warts. Most people have heard of that. Now, not all forms of HPV are sexually transmitted. They're transmitted by contact with other humans. So think about if you have a wart on your knee or one on your foot or your finger or something like that. Those were not from sexual contact. But the ones on the genital area or in the mouth or the throat are much more likely to be contracted through some sort of intimate contact. In my job, like you said, it's preventive, right? That's what pediatrics is about. It's one of the only fields that it operates that way. Is our job is to prevent disease. Most other medical field studies are for treating disease. So
right.
So vaccines are our lane, right? That's what we do. HPV vaccine is amazing in how effective it is at preventing the cancers, but also the genital warts, the mouth and throat warts. There's a new publication from the CDC actually out earlier this month, and a new publication in the Journal of Pediatrics earlier this month is very timely for our discussion today. But showing the long-term follow-up studies for the original study subjects who got the vaccine during drug trials. Now, it's been since 2006 that the vaccine was routinely recommended for girls 9 to 26.
2006.
And that was the original HPV vaccine that was quadrivalent, meaning it protected against four types of HPV-related cancers. Within a few years, though, that expanded to nine types. So we have the one that we have now is the HPV 9-valent. So it protects against nine different types. So the 10-year study that's currently being published is the 9-valent. So it's been longer than 10 years, almost 20 years since the vaccines have been out to protect against HPV. But the current vaccine that we have has been out just over 10 years. And so the long-term follow-up studies show us that currently the people who are still enrolled in the study are just as well protected against HPV-related disease as they were 3 years out and 5 years out. It's been 10 years, and they're still very well protected, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Now, they divide the protection into two different types. One is protection against infection, meaning you have the infection. It may not be making you sick. And disease, meaning you have the infection and it's making you sick in some way, or it's showing itself in some way. So for us in pediatrics, when we're talking with kids, we want to prevent the infection because that prevents long-term disease. Well, when do we try to protect them against a disease or an infection that can cause them difficulty if they're intimate? Well, we want to do that before they're intimate.
And now, I think that's
the important part.
Having two daughters and reflecting on that, I think there's a little pushback being uninformed about it, that, you know, somehow is taboo, understandably, to talk about sexually transmitted disease in a young adolescent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that you know, why would you be doing that? And I get it. You know, I completely mm-hmm. understand. And but, you know, I think the cancer prevention part of it, and that combined with, at the same time, that conference that I was attending where they talked about this, I was like, wow. Well, also that these aggressive cancers that have come, people are presenting with more advanced cancer across
right.
the board.
Right.
And this trend was prior to the pandemic. So this is
correct.
Not simply screening exams
correct.
From delayed because of the pandemic. That's going to amplify it. Mm-hmm. And we're going to see that's going to be more of a problem. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. But, you know, so I think those two things are really, really, really impressive.
Yes.
That how's that's worked.
Yes. Well, with, like you said, with the, you know, the younger population or talking about sexually transmitted infections in young adolescents or pre-adolescents, a lot of times people don't want to talk about that. Even some pediatricians and family practitioners struggle to have conversations where we talk about kids being intimate or having sex with other kids. But when I have parents ask me, well, why would it be important for a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old to get this? We're not looking at this being an issue for years from now. Well, with our latest studies, 10 years from now, it's just as effective. Well, yeah, I want to get my kid protected as soon as possible if it's going to last her 10 years or more. So I oftentimes will talk with families about that. The other thing that I think about as a parent, but also as a pediatrician, is how do I protect my kid from the things that she's not choosing? Sexual assault is a very real danger for so many people, and not just girls, but boys too.
You know, there's some billboard I drive by in the morning. It said 1 in 4, mm-hmm. I think,
yep.
Men have been sexually assaulted.
Right. And regardless of gender, it's the, like you said, the statistics are there, that we know that the dangers are there. Well, I don't want my kid to get cancer because of something that somebody else did. And so it's not just about my daughter making good choices. It's about the people around her protecting her or not protecting her. So for me, it was just kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
Yep. How do I prevent cancer?
Let me pick your brain a little bit on mm-hmm. this, on just vaccines in general, because I think that's part of the discussion. Mm-hmm. My mother had polio, right? My dad, they had German measles when they were born. They had people that they knew that died from the measles. Mm-hmm. So when I was in the early 70s in the vaccine receiving era of my life, it was unquestioned, you know, yeah, you're going to get the polio
right.
vaccine, right?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even talk about it because my mom was bedfast for 18 months, you know,
right.
so she's like, no, this is not a discussion.
Right.
My dad with the measles, mumps, rubella is like, yeah, of course you're going to get it. You know, your tetanus, et cetera. And I think we did such a good job that those, you know, yellow smallpox was eliminated from the world for the most part. The polio is near eradication.
Exactly.
With the, what is it, Lions Club or whatever does. Mm-hmm. That's their kind of their thing. So I don't think the generations that are out and about now think about these diseases much.
Right. I agree with you.
So, and then, you know, even the flu shot, the general population is like 20%. Healthcare senior citizens are in the 40%. Medical staff, I mean, we're almost 100%.
Right.
We require it. Yeah. We encourage it. You know, yeah. But just people get it. But, you know, I think with the pandemic and with COVID, we squandered what little trust we had in vaccines just based upon how we handle it. And, you know, I think about all the time, like, what could we have done differently? What could I have done differently? You know, and so there is this rebuilding trust in vaccinations. And, you know, I hope that it's not, we don't have some sort of polio virus
right.
that causes us to build that. So what are you seeing in your practice as far as trust in vaccines?
My current practice, I still see the same types of questions about vaccines and the doubts about vaccines that I saw when I was in residency almost 20 years ago.
Really?
Or actually, it was 20 years ago. And I can remember at the time when it was about 2005 that the CDC had put out a Morbidity and Mortality Weekly, you know, the MMWR, mm-hmm. which is their publication on the most recent information about a disease or about a trend, you know, a health trend or a social trend. And they put these things out to tell just widespread medical and scientific community about those things. So there was an MMWR on people who were under vaccinated versus unvaccinated. And at the time, the under-vaccinated individuals were more likely to be children who had a lower socioeconomic level, less education in the parents, which was interesting to me. But the way that they then extrapolated that out, or actually just the finer details of that were, these were individuals who had lower paying jobs and were unable to leave work to get their kids to the doctor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
they didn't have transportation.
Yeah.
They couldn't go to the health department. It may be 30 miles away and they had no way to get there. So, and maybe the message of the importance of vaccines just hadn't gotten to them. So when they come in, we get them the vaccine, but they may go a year without coming back. And so they're under vaccinated, meaning they have not had the full series. The completely unvaccinated children in that publication were more likely to have parents who were double income and college or higher degree individuals. And so the finer details of that were, these were people who doubted the system a little more. The friends of mine who are vaccine doubters, what the current term would be, like anti-vax, or, you know, or just they don't vaccinate their children. They had said, you know, it's a general mistrust of the system, the man, you know, the government, the school systems, the, you know, healthcare. And so with that mistrust, it's, okay, well, we're just not going to do these things. Over time in my career, I've continued to see that same argument for, well, no, I don't trust vaccines because I don't trust the government to keep me safe. I don't trust, you know, the public healthcare system to keep me safe. Privatized healthcare, I don't trust all that. So there's that. But in my career, I've noticed a little bleeding over of who's unvaccinated. And it's not just the higher educated, higher paid job parents who are unvaccinated, not vaccinating their children. It's some others too, even into the, you know, the lower socioeconomic level. And I think that that comes from this growing, you know, not necessarily a mistrust, but a doubt of who's looking out for me, who's looking out for my kids. They're not sure who to go to. I'm not sure that there's anything that I can do personally, or even among pediatricians or healthcare professionals like us. I don't know that there's anything that I can do to combat that, except to show up every day and do the good medicine that I know how to do, and talk with families and just have that conversation. I advise, right?
From the COVID, at least say, this is pretty important, and you need to talk to your physician about it, because mm-hmm. it may not be right for you. Because at the end of the day, I think patients are willing to sit with their doctor and listen mm-hmm. and say, because there's some people I'm like, no, I wouldn't get the booster. You don't need it.
Right.
There's other people I'm like, yeah, the risk over the benefit is mm-hmm. it's the risk is a lot higher if you don't get it.
Right.
Because it depends on the patient, right?
Right.
And I think people are more comfortable with that than just a blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
I think we have, you know, but again, it goes back to what I said earlier, that I think if your parents had measles, or you had a sibling that had measles, or your mother had polio, it's real. And so, mm-hmm. you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I can't think of the name. You know, people always say that vaccine causes autism, and I won't get into that as far as that. I mean, I think the studies have been conclusive.
Absolutely. There is no support for that. Absolutely.
But if you go back to the doctor that suggested that, mm-hmm. he's a gastroenterologist, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And he based it on things that the patients told him. Mm-hmm. Not a study.
Right.
Not observation in his practice.
Right.
Just patients coming in to see him. Mm-hmm. And when he's taking the history, you know, oh, hi, I'm going to see you for your Crohn's disease. What's your family history? Mm-hmm. Well, I have a child that has autism, and I think it's from a vaccine.
Right.
And he took that as, you know, solid evidence mm-hmm. and right. has been disproven. And,
right. Now, he's up until a few years ago was still practicing in the U.S. without a license. So he didn't go away. And the people who liked him as a physician continued to see him, even though he was from England and was not allowed to practice there anymore. He got exiled from England. They said, you don't get to work here anymore.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, he came here and practiced without a license. But, I mean, there are people who seek that, you know. And the patients who love him, love him.
Yeah.
And it was enough for them. There's that trust in him when for the rest of the scientific and medical community all said, no, that's not true.
And, you know, and that goes back to the mm-hmm. the observation I said earlier, that the power of the doctor-patient relationship
is
a privilege.
It is. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And should not be squandered away.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it, you know, for me, when I talk to families, I get two different arguments or two different concerns from parents or guardians about why they don't want to get the HPV vaccine, for instance. And one of them is I think our kids are too young. Okay. Well, like I said earlier, this is about preventing disease, preventing infection. It's not about treating it. So you're right. Your kid doesn't have HPV right now. Great. Let's keep it that way.
Right.
So it's licensed and effective and safe down to age 9, then great, let's do that. And I tell them, my daughter got hers at age 9. First available, yes, let's sign you up, let's get it. And I was thrilled. And she got her second one, and she was good. Now, under age 15, if you start the series, it's only 2 shots. 15 and up, it's a set of 3. Because the younger age group develops such a good immune response after 2 doses that they don't need a third.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. Kids are just cool. The other concern that I get from parents is, I've taught my child my values, our family values. They're not going to have sex with someone before they're adults or before they're married, or, you know, insert whatever value that someone has taught their kid. Absolutely. And I love that parents are sharing that with their kids, sharing those those hopes and those dreams with their children. I want that. I want their family to bond in that way. I'm going to play the role of advisor and say that's not good enough. Because like I said earlier, it's not just about what my kid chooses to do. Now, all of us were kids, and we did some really not wise things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and, you know, a friend of mine growing up, he stole his parents' car and drove around, well, you know, like,
you know, when you're, and when you're 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, mm-hmm. up to probably 25 for most people. Mm-hmm.
Your brain's still, it's still developing.
You know, that's what, so, that's my, where I come down to marijuana, you know, I said, look, you want to use marijuana, that's fine, but don't start until after you're 25.
Yeah, right. Because make a good choice on this. Exactly.
I don't think you should use it at all, but right. if you're going to wait till you're after 25.
Exactly. Wait for the rest of your brain to
catch up.
And,
you know, when you're 19, you probably should feel invincible. You know?
I mean, they do.
That would be horrible to go around, you know, as a late teens and feel, you know, afraid. And,
right. Exactly. You know, it's part of the wonder and the excitement of being a kid and to feel invincible.
But I think you're right to say that that's not going to change. Therefore, mm-hmm. here's a medicine mm-hmm. we can use to
right.
do that.
Right. So those are the two common ones that I hear. Now, actually, there's a third one that the longer I do this job, I almost want to chuckle about it, is that it's too new. I mentioned that it was first licensed for use in girls in 2006.
Yeah.
That's 18 years ago.
I did not.
It's not actually new.
I did not fault people for saying, like, with the COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm.
It's new.
To say this is, I just would like to see more time. And, you know, we had some of those discussions on the medical staff to how long is it good for? And we came down to 6 months based on mm-hmm. Cleveland Clinic had followed mm-hmm. their employees for 6 months.
Right.
You know, and I had a lot of good conversations where I was criticized of that constructively from my colleagues to say, mm-hmm. it's a vaccine. It's longer than that. I said, mm-hmm. but we don't have the data for that.
Right.
You know?
Right. And, well, we know the influenza vaccine is not effective for years.
Right.
Where, you know, you get a full year, you're doing really good.
Yeah, absolutely. If they guess
so,
right.
Right. Exactly. So. That one is losing less of its steam over time, but I still hear that. Yeah. And so I'm not really sure why people continue to say, well, it's very new when it's actually old. If you think about 18 years into medical practice, well, we're kind of getting to the old guy stage, right?
So. Well, and then also kind of back to the whole polio measles thing. We don't want to have an epidemic of cervical cancers.
No.
To then have everyone go, oh boy, I should get my HPV vaccine, right? Mm-hmm.
Right, well, because then, it doesn't protect you against the strain that you have already been infected with.
So is there an age that's too late because it's so common that?
No, actually, there's not. We have the vaccine that's the 9-valent. I mentioned it protects against 9 different types. And you become exposed and potentially infected with different types over time. But the chances of you actually being infected with and developing antibodies against all 9 different kinds are pretty slim. So if I've had 1 or 2 types, well, this is going to protect me against an additional 7.
Got it.
So there's really not a too late time, even if you've had cervical cancer or mouth or throat cancer due to HPV. The vaccine is licensed up to age 45.
Is that what it is?
After age 26, it's considered something that you would want to have a discussion about because we don't see the 26 to 45-year olds as the target population. Like you mentioned, at some point your brain development is complete and you're actually functioning with an adult brain. So 26 is when you are less likely to make those adolescent impulsive decisions.
We hope.
Exactly. So 26 to 45 is considered the time when, yes, you are eligible to get the vaccine, and it can be very helpful for you. There are some people who are going to be higher risk. We absolutely want them to get that. Some people re-entering the dating field at 30, you know, well, maybe that's a person that wants to go ahead and get the vaccine.
I was doing primary care and I had an uncircumcised male in his 20s or even early 30s, I would say you need this.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
That's the number one cause of penile cancer is uncircumcised.
Exactly. You know, it's in the long-term follow-up study that I was looking in, I mentioned earlier in the talk, the males, and they stratified males and females. So presuming male having penis and female having a vulva and a vagina and a cervix. The males were more likely to have oropharyngeal cancers, so mouth and throat, and the females were more likely to have vulva and cervical, of course. So it was interesting to me that the majority of the cancers that were seen in the study population weren't penile cancers. I mean, like you said, it's a high cause, it's a top cause for penile cancers, but that's not actually what most people have. The more people have a mouth or throat cancer. I don't know that a lot of adults are walking around thinking about getting HPV when they're kissing someone.
Right.
But you do.
Which is probably the most common.
Exactly. So if somebody has HPV in their mouth or under their tongue, yeah, you can get that from them. We're talking about a different risk now, you know, much more risky than talking about two people having, you know, intercourse. I myself got my HPV vaccine. My OBGYN suggested it at 44. She said, "Do you want to get the HPV vaccine?" And I said, "I honestly never even thought about it for myself. I mean, I'm a happily married woman, but I walk to my car in the dark every day."
Yeah.
You know, I'm oftentimes the last one to leave my office. I have no fear going out to get the paper or mail from the mailbox. Maybe I should, but I don't.
Right.
But well, let me protect myself. Yeah. You know, like it didn't even occur to me, but I said, absolutely, yes.
These days, you have to be aware of your surroundings at all
absolutely.
Times. I don't care where
so,
you're
yeah,
at.
Exactly. Yeah. So I said, yeah, you know what? I'll protect me too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah.
You always have good advice.
Oh, thank you.
Before we wrap up, we always ask, and I know we've asked you before, why pediatrics?
Why not? This is the best. I tell the residents and the students I work with, this is where it's at. Kids are just awesome. Even when they are stubborn or mean or yelling or angry or sad or hurting, they're just so awesome. They really are just amazing, amazing people. And so, yeah, who wouldn't want to be a part of that every day?
I can remember when my kids were young. I could come up with a good idea why I would know. I'm just
no. It's funny because I have that same feeling about adults. I mean, I like adults, okay, but you know, if you give me a paper cut, I'm going to complain about it to anybody who will listen all day. But a 5-year-old who has, you know, a broken leg or has had a surgery or has cancer, they'll do music and play with dogs and they dance and they dress up and they do all the things.
They're kind of like a dog in a way, like, oh, this is bothering me, until they see something shiny and bright and they're like, okay, this doesn't bother me.
I want that. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, it's pretty cool. I can't do adults. We're too whiny.
Yeah. That is true. Dr. Conte, thank you for joining me today to discuss this important topic, and we'll keep you on the panel for vaccines as they come forward, and I'm sure we'll see some new stuff in the years to come. Once again, this is Dr. Dina Conte, pediatrician with Unity Point Clinic Pediatrics, Tower Terrace. To find a pediatrician for your child, visit unitypoint.org/find-a-doctor. Thank you for listening to Live Well Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.